stuff gets said. Oh, coming up the end of next week, not this week, but next week, the caffeinated thoughts briefing. What's that? You know, Shane Vanderhart. He's one of our friends here. He's an expert on Common Core. And he's invited a bunch of people to come and chat with stuff. It's kind of a briefing for people who want to know stuff, I think. I've been invited to speak there, and I'm eagerly anticipating listening to Dr. Cal Meisner. He is the founder and national spokesperson for the Cornwall Alliance, who is joining us briefly on our Newsmaker line this morning. Good morning, Doc. How you doing? Welcome aboard, and I eagerly anticipate what you're likely to tell us next weekend. Do you have any idea the direction you're likely to take your listeners?
Well, there are a couple of major things. I mean, of course, you've already mentioned the Common Core, and what's getting piggybacked onto that is something called the Next Generation Science Standards. It's not actually part of the Common Core, but it was very intentionally written to fit with the Common Core, and a lot of the people behind the Next Generation Science Standards are the same people who were behind the Common Core.
Why does science need standards? I mean, it is either it's science or it ain't, isn't it? I mean, either we're
Well, that's actually part of the point, is that there are some standards for what constitutes science and what doesn't. I mean, Ouija boards are not particularly scientific as a way of figuring out what's happening in the world around us.
Unless you're really, really good at it.
Right, and perhaps if you've smoked enough pot. Before, I don't know.
Well, you got to, and if you do get in contact with a particularly prescient demon, sometimes they can give you an insight.
Better maybe an alien, you know, from some other planet. But at any rate, you know, there's a lot that goes under the name of science that, frankly, just isn't really science. It isn't particularly rational. For instance. There's a whole movement called post-normal science, and this is basically postmodern deconstruction applied to the sciences. And deconstruction says that language doesn't exist to convey meaning or truth. It only exists to project power.
Well, if that's the case, how do they expect us to understand everything they've said after premise one?
Exactly. And of course, it's self-refuting, because if language only exists to project power, we have no reason to think that they mean anything, or that anything that they say is true. And in fact, we only have reason to suspect them, because they are trying to project their power on us.
Which is invalidates the first frame, and invalidates the whole
exactly.
idea.
So, exactly.
But they're not embarrassed about it, it sounds like.
No. In fact,
who's the they, by the way? I'm sorry to keep interrupting you. But who are the they? Who are the people would even come up with this notion?
The two most important philosophers of science behind this would be Jerome Ravitz of Oxford and Silvio Funtovich, who's a Spaniard, but I don't remember just where he is. And then another very important one is Dr. Mike Hume. Mike Hume is formerly professor of climate change at the University of East Anglia in Britain.
Right.
And if anybody recognizes the name of that university, it's probably because of something called ClimateGate.
Yes.
An incident back in 2009 when somebody, nobody knows, well, nobody but the one who did it, I guess, knows exactly who this was or how it happened, but somebody managed to release to the public on a website thousands of emails, plus computer code and documentation for computer programs,
right,
related to global warming research from the very central people in
right.
the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. What these revealed is that these roughly dozen and a half or so scientists have been fabricating data, exaggerating data, suppressing data that are contrary to their hypothesis of dangerous man-made global warming,
right,
intimidating scientists to reach different conclusions,
yes,
corrupting the peer review process, and intimidating, and in one instance actually procuring the resignation of a journal editor who was willing to publish contrary articles.
So if you tell
in
the truth,
words,
you get fired.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, this is post-normal science at work. And
well,
in fact, Mike Hume, who trained many of the most prominent leaders in the climate alarmist community, said that the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, on which he has served for many years, is a primary example of post-normal science.
Well, here's the post-normal. I think this is a fascinating word that you're using. But you've written about this before. You wrote something back in July called The Threat to the Scientific Method that explains the spate of fraudulent science publications. We've noticed this. We were just talking about this yesterday, Dr. Beisner. We were talking about the CDC scientist who admitted they falsified data and withheld data on the toxic effects of the MMR vaccine and the connection it had to autism. And we had up here at ISU a professor who did get busted for it, but he falsified information in the results of studies on quote, AIDS research. And when he got caught, nobody could duplicate his research. They caught him and busted him. But what accounts for this seemingly spate of fraud, and what you're describing is not post-normal. It's it's maybe post-normative.
It's very normal sinfulness at work.
Just another day that ends in Y. If you have politics and money involved with scientific endeavor.
Yeah. Well, you know, there is the one problem of politics and money getting involved in science, and that corrupts quite a lot. The late President Dwight Eisenhower actually warned of that in his farewell address to the nation. But I think there's a much deeper issue involved, and that is that most scientists trained in the last 50 to 60 years were trained up under a worldview of methodological naturalism, and even metaphysical naturalism. What that means is, whether you think that there is anything other than matter and energy in motion, that is, whether you are a materialist or not, you have to do your science as if you were a materialist. No room to appeal to any personal intelligence that designed the world to work the way the world works.
What's wrong with that?
Well, the problem with that, as C.S. Lewis pointed out in a chapter called Naturalism in his book on miracles, is that naturalism, and that's what this is, naturalism is basically the argument that there is no such thing as argument, which is rather silly. But the point is this, if matter and energy in motion is all that is, then there is no such thing as reasoning. Your thoughts come about simply because of the collision of atoms or molecules in your brain. And, you know, collisions of material objects do not produce reasons. So the problem with naturalism is that it is inherently anti-rational. It's part of the flight from logos.
Well, help me understand, logos. Because let me walk you through a slightly different way of seeing this, okay? And then you can beat me up,
sure.
All right? In previous generations that were not afflicted by what you're describing, when something interesting got discovered, for instance, the technology behind the telephone, when the technology of being able to move sound out of wire, for however that mystery works, when it was discovered that it could happen, the fellow said, "Look what God did." And we just discovered what God did, but we did not start with the assumption that everything is a mystery. We started with the idea that God created the heavens and earth, and he gave us the ability to observe it and deconstruct it and post it and reverse engineer it. So we could figure it out. We started with the idea that it was of significance. It was created, but that there was cause and effect within that system, and we could figure it out. We don't start with the assumption.
You up about this? You're saying really good stuff. Here.
Well, no, I'm just thinking. How is it different though from the pagan scientist who says, "All right, we say, look what God did." They would say, "Look what we've just discovered." But we have other explanations how it got here, but wouldn't the mechanisms that be the same once we look at them?
Well, you know, for a while that can work. Science, as a systematic, programmatic activity of rational investigation of the universe, arose historically in only one place and only one time, and that was medieval Europe, where the Christian worldview dominated, where people believed that a rational God designed a rational universe to be understood by rational creatures made in his image.
You mean the Dark Ages?
Right, the Dark Ages, which were not so dark after all. And for hundreds of years, that worldview predominated as the paradigm for scientific thought. All of the greatest scientists from the Middle Ages up through most of the 19th century, and many, many great scientists since then, have been Christians, or at least Jews, who would embrace this worldview. Now, when you abandon that worldview, you can stumble along for a good long while, operating on that epistemological capital without actually embracing the worldview. But
you're not going to be using, by the way, just for the sake of discussion here, and this weekend thing, this briefing you're going to be participating in. You're not going to be using language like this epistemological, whatever you said it was.
Well, I'll explain it.
I think that's illegal.
Epistemology having to do with the theory of knowledge, how we know things, what we know, and why.
Will you have people up in front, interpreting for you, and maybe I'll write down smaller words and maybe even, hand gestures so we can...
Well, you talk to Brian Myers and the others hosting and see if they can arrange that.
You have subtitles for Beisner.
Yeah, but the deal here, of course, is that just as we're seeing the collapse of morality in America because the moral capital has been abandoned. We're now into relativism as the dominant worldview. And for a while, from, say, the 1920s through 1950s and the early 60s, I suppose, for a while, American culture maintained its basic moral outlook, despite the fact that the underlying philosophical foundations were gone. Well, in the last 30 to 40 years, instead, we're seeing a real breakdown in morality and behavior.
You're saying that we're going to see in science the same kind of breakdown that was happening?
Oh, we're already seeing it.
So what do you predict then? Because here's what people are kind of cynical now about what politicians say. If their lips are moving, we don't believe them. Are we going to get to the point where we almost say the same thing about the guys in the white coats, if they're scientists, we just know, okay, why is he saying that, and who's paying the bills, and who's buying the opinion?
That is exactly what's already being said about more and more different scientists. And I've been reading on the blogs of quite a number of different scientists who are very concerned about the fact that particularly climate scientists who've been pushing the alarm over global warming have been earning science a black eye because of exactly the kinds of things that were revealed in the ClimateGate emails. Fabricating data, exaggerating data, repressing contrary data, intimidating scientists to find contrary conclusions.
Well, the scary part of that, Doc, is if that happens, if that becomes just another day that ends in Y, you're right, that would kill off progress. But more importantly, when something actually of a catastrophic nature could be occurring or is occurring, we never believe them because we wouldn't.
That's right.
We wouldn't. Well, you were lying last week. You were crying wolf on Thursday. Why should we believe you on Tuesday?
You know, there's nothing new under the sun. Aesop got it. You know, Aesop's fable about the little boy who cried wolf.
What's the fix?
Well, the fix, frankly, is a spiritual revival. The fix is the careful and thorough preaching of the gospel, and then the discipling of those who are converted to Christ, and taking back over by Christians of the leadership in scientific endeavors.
There are lots of really good
Christians out there who are scientists, and many of them are doing this.
Harass you some here, because I know Christians. I am one, but I also know people who are. And they are just as, or can be just as subject to temptation. The dollar bill can affect how the preaching is done in the pulpit. The threat of withdrawing funds can change theology. You've seen the history in the old world, how you pay for the theology that you get on Sunday, and you can buy out a theologian just as easy as you can buy out a pagan scientist.
Well, you know, there are two things really that lie beneath the way we communicate, and one is our, I'll risk the word again here, epistemology, our theory of knowledge.
That's two times you have violated the prime directive here. For that offense, I need to take a time out, and you're going to be expected to ponder your sins, okay, for a couple of minutes, all right?
Okay, we'll do that.
Gal Beisner, Dr. Beisner is on with us. He is a brilliant observer of stuff, and he's going to be visiting us here in Iowa next weekend, part of the Caffeinated Thoughts briefing. And we'll come back with one segment with him remaining on 1040 WHO Radio.
I'm Scott Michelson, your Iowa Gold Connection. The cost of servicing our national debt is the fastest growing line item in the entire federal budget. This year, we will spend more than $200 billion on interest payments alone. That's four times what we spend at the Department of Education and 40 times larger than what we spend on immigration and customs enforcement. And in the next 10 years, just the interest, this is not principal, this is just the annual interest payment. We get nothing for these dollars. But that payment will quadruple to almost $900 billion every year. Everything else in the entire political discussion will become irrelevant in less than 10 years. We're not going to last another decade, folks. Debt kills nations. That's how it works. The best thing you can do for your family is to get away from everybody else's debt with physical gold and silver. Call 1-800-819-7160 or visit iowagoldconnection.com and request your free information. That's 1-800-819-7160 or visit iowagoldconnection.com.
Coming up, I'm going to take apart some of the debate last night, the Young Apple get-together. That's for the congressional thing. Plus, the president has said even more things. We're going to talk about war and peace. We're going to talk about a scam of a sham of a parody of a hoax. I'm not sure what that is, but we'll figure it out. But this weekend, not this weekend, but Saturday, September 20th, the Airport Holiday Inn and Conference Center, Caffeinated Thoughts, assembling a panel of experts and me, the first annual Caffeinated Thoughts briefing. It's kind of a confab where you'll get a chance to listen to a really fine speaker like a Dr. Beisner here from the Cornwall Alliance, who is, in essence, looking at the direction of our culture, and we are on a slippery slope. We have a moral collapse. But because of the same reason for the moral entropy of our culture, the scientific world has caught that disease, and it's if we don't catch it, it's terminal. Or am I being too dramatic here, Dr. Beisner? What is science in collapse does what to a culture or an economy?
Well, for one thing, it brings to an end scientific progress, including technological progress. And that's what happens when you screw up your theory of knowledge, you screw up your theory of what the world is like, and you screw up your theory of morality, ethics. When those three are messed up, you're guaranteed an awful lot of failures. Just before the break, you were mentioning, hey, you know, Christians are capable of messing up too. Well, that's true. But if you start with truth as to theory of knowledge, theory of the nature of the world around us, and theory of right and wrong, then at least when you screw up, it's because of something, you know, that is inconsistent about you. But when you screw up because your theory of knowledge, your theory of reality, and your theory of morality are all wrong in the first place, then the screw-ups are totally consistent. So, you know, we have to recognize that your starting point really is determinative of where you're going to go.
Well, in the worst case scenario is what science did, and I've always, of recent vintage, said the first word that uses the Hitler word loses the discussion. But you saw in the Soviet system and in that system, you saw the science in service of evil. We are not that far behind. You can see science in service of evil in this country too.
Yeah, you know, in the Soviet Union, there was what was called Lysenkoism. There was a geneticist by the name of Lysenko who believed that, you know, if you cut off the arm of a child, And when that child grew up and fathered children, it was a little more likely that those children might be born without an arm or with an arm that was a little bit less capable. You do that enough generations in a row, and you'll wind up with armless people. That's the theory of acquired characteristics. Now, that turned out, of course, to have been absolutely false, but Joseph Stalin embraced Lysenko, and literally, scientists who questioned him were tortured and in some instances killed. They were forced into mental asylums where they, they were subjected to amazing treatment. That's Lysenkoism. Well, we're seeing a similar thing in Western science now regarding certain politically correct ideas. And the biggest one at the moment is this whole notion that man-made carbon dioxide emissions from using fossil fuels to provide the energy we need to lift people out of poverty and keep them out of poverty is causing catastrophic global warming.
Well, isn't that basically back to the post-normal science application, power-based science?
Yes, it is.
And they just they want to be able to control everything that goes into the economy. The environment is the foot in the door. They kick down the door because it's warm fuzzy. If they said, we're just bigger, stronger, and faster than you, give us your money, we'd resist that. But if it's the, hey, the planet, mama is hurting, therefore we have to be in control so you don't make mommy cry. That resonates because it's an emotional appeal, not based on science.
Yeah, it is an emotional appeal, and unfortunately, my talk next week or week after next is going to be on the very issue the next generation science standards, and they incorporate both post-normal science and global warming alarmism.
But now that we've caught on to them,
as if they're fact.
But can we, now that we caught on to the mechanism, can we, because people caught on to the Common Core, and it's being resisted all over the country.
Right.
Once they catch on to what you're talking about, would the same effect, do you anticipate the same effect?
Yeah, I think so. In fact, there is a group in Kansas called Citizens for Objective Public Education that is doing just outstanding work critiquing the next generation science standards and has brought lawsuit against them because the science standards are not only really bad science, but also they fail the constitutional test as far as religion is concerned. According to the Supreme Court in multiple rulings, public education curriculum must be religiously neutral when it treats various different topics that have religious implications. And the science standards are not. They are explicitly atheistic, naturalistic, and that is a religious position.
So, Cal, I am out of
we're
time.
We're going to see this knocked out.
Absolutely. Dr. Beisner, thank you for joining us. I eagerly anticipate what you're going to say next weekend, and that is the September 20th. And look for Caffeinated Thoughts online. You can come to this conference if you're inclined. And if we wanted to see more of your work, including you had a video series. I think it's Inside the Red Dragon. It talks about all this stuff.
It's Resisting the Green Dragon is what the video series is called.
I'm colorblind.
We also have a recent documentary out called Blue, Beautify, Liberate, Utilize, Enjoy as an Alternative to Green.
Okay.
And then people can come to our page on Facebook, Cornwall Alliance on Facebook.
Okay.
And then, of course, our own website, cornwallalliance.org.
Hey, thank you so much for your time this morning, sir.
Jan, thanks very much for yours.
Looking
forward to seeing you.
You betcha. Right after our farm markets,